Whether you're buying a new car, a used car, or refinancing your current car, FedChoice Federal Credit Union could help save you money. FedChoice makes buying a car so easy that you can do everything right from your smartphone or on a computer. Become a member today and you can take advantage of their great rates and financing options. Find out more at FedChoice.org. That's FedChoice.org. Membership open to federal employees, including contractors and their families. FedChoice Federal Credit Union insured by NCUA.
Elizabeth Schultz, Fairfax County School Board member, thank you so much for joining us on The Good Word.
I love this podcast. I'm going to tell you, it's phenomenal.
Thank you so much. So it's a new podcast, as you know, it's faith-based. Typically, we tape at our Fox 5 DC studios in Northwest, but today we are actually in your neck of the woods in Fairfax at Robinson Secondary School. This is a place that's near and dear to your heart. Tell us why.
It certainly is. So I have four boys. I have put four boys through. My third just graduated this past June, and I have a fourth Ram who have 1 year reprieve. This is a secondary school, so it's 7th through 12th. So he'll be in sixth grade next year, and then I'll be right back in the Ram family the following year for 6 years after that.
Wow, so this school has been in your family for quite some time. They also have a new principal you were talking about that.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Today?
Just within the hour, it got announced that Tracy Phillips, who was the previous associate principal, we lost our principal who transferred to another county in the spring, and we had her as an interim. We did a search. We didn't come up with someone. She wasn't in the first pool, and she decided to apply and went through the process, and just today we announced her, and I am thrilled. I'm thrilled for her, and I'm thrilled for the Robinson community. She is going to be a phenomenal principal at Robinson.
So we have a new principal. We're actually taping the podcast, The Good Word, in a completely new location. We've never done this before, so this is pretty exciting. But it is a faith-based podcast, and you and I have had conversations over the last several months. You are a woman of faith, so let's just get right into it. How do you balance your faith being a public figure in such a visible role that you were in, dealing with so many polarizing topics that you are very vocal about? How do you balance your faith when it comes to that?
Well, first of all, it's very easy if you reset to North every morning. You know, if you know yourself and you operate from a position of faith, whatever faith tradition, for me it's Roman Catholic. I've been married for 28 years with our four boys, and you're already living it. The question is, can you just transfer what you're doing in your faith to what you do in your everyday life? Mm-hmm. And that's, as an elected official, I can't leave it at the door. I don't hang up my faith and say, you know, I'm only going to practice my faith in my personal life and in my professional life or in my public service life. I'm going to check, you know, check the faith. Mm-hmm. It is who you are, I think, if you are already operating from a faith tradition. And it does mean that you take criticism. It does mean that you are a target, but I think that that comes with a natural life of faith.
You said that you don't leave it at the door. So by not leaving it at the door, you know, you find yourself in some pretty interesting situations. Sometimes you are the only voice advocating for something. What's the biggest challenge? What is the biggest challenge when you typically, you know, as you said, decide not to leave your faith at the door?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is you have to be prepared that people are going to be abusive, and they are going to attempt to tear you down, to objectify you through, you know, a lens of faith and say, well, you know, you shouldn't be operating that way. But I think it goes to making ethical decisions as a school board member, is that if you have a basis in which your ethics come from, then it's a very easy way to make decisions. I'm very clear all the time. I don't waver. So I'm at least consistent, and people know that I'm going to be consistent. And I think that is a reliable thing for the public to go, well, I may not always agree with what she says, mm-hmm. but I know that she has a committed reason why she's saying it. And I get that a lot. There are people that don't share, you know, the same political party or the same faith, but what they do say is, you know, I respect you. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I don't do it for their respect, but it's nice when I do hear that, and I do hear it a lot, that I'm not trying to make decisions for faith, but I'm using my faith to inform my decisions, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think, you know, as we were talking, I was just thinking about, you know, when I was growing up, we prayed in school.
Yeah.
The Pledge of Allegiance was under God. And it seems like all of that has been removed from the classroom. And now we're dealing with problems that we did not deal with as much or as deep 20, 30 years ago.
10 years ago. Look, you know, I go like a whole generation of age and the range of my children, and I've seen the change just from my oldest to my youngest child. And my children have been in parochial school and Catholic school and private school. But a long time ago, I had to move over to the public school. And, you know, what I tried to do is help them carry their faith, too, is don't be afraid to express it. You know, if you want to write a paper that is from a position of faith. And even the children are getting mocked. And I think that it's important that if there are adults who will stand up, and act as if, look, my faith matters and your faith matters. And if you don't have a faith, you know, I have people who contact me who say, I'm an atheist or, you know, I'm agnostic, and I at least respect that you are consistent in your viewpoint. And that's really what you want to do. You want to give that gift to the people that you're serving, and as a model for the children. And I do think what you're seeing, the way social media goes, you know, people will say the most abusive things on social mm-hmm. media or in writing mm-hmm. that they would never say to your face. Mm. And I do think, I wonder how much, you know, faith has exited people's lives and something else has come in to fill it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying that we need to make, you know, public schools religious schools, but it's a little bit sad that even children have a hard time forming clubs and finding someone to be a sponsor, that a staff member is willing to go out on a limb and act as a sponsor for a religious club. So, you know, there's been a sea change, you know, in our public life. And so if you go back to how you set your compass every day, every week on Sunday, if you take your family to church and you go, okay, I may be mocked for it, I may pay a price, but ultimately that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's the way to operate my life. There's a comfort there that there is no degree of popularity will ever solve.
You are operating from a moral compass. Some people are not. So as someone who's operating from a moral compass, what's been the reaction from colleagues?
So a perfect example, when we put together the portrait of a graduate and the qualities that we would like a student to have at the time that they graduate, one of the main tenets was that they be a global, you know, student, have a global outlook. And I was really concerned about that, and I worked with a couple of my colleagues to insert the word ethical, because to me, you know, okay, well, I'd rather that you be, you know, that you be focused on our country and our history in the lens of the global economy and global politics, and not just be a student of, you know, the globe. But if you're ethical, that's the first place to start. Mm-hmm. If we can teach and produce ethical citizens, mm-hmm. whether they're going into college, going into the workforce, you want an ethical mechanic. You want an ethical doctor. You want an ethical house painter. Mm-hmm. You know, you want people at every strata of life to be productive, tax-paying citizens who are ethical.
Right.
We had that vote passed by just one vote. 5 school board members voted against a student being ethical.
Why?
Because the argument was whose ethics? Do you mean Western ethics, Taoist ethics? You know, this became sort of this philosophical, random conversation to pull us off a moral compass by muddying the waters, and that's exactly the type of thing that gets frustrating.
So when I think of ethics, I think of right versus wrong. Mm-hmm. Is that up for debate? Are we debating right versus wrong?
I think we are. I think we are, because who's right? You know, on the question of equity and the notion of this concept of one Fairfax that's getting passed, and we're making decisions in Fairfax County government and Fairfax County Public Schools, you know, through the lens of equity. And I ask, what's equity mean? They say, well, what's fair and just? And I'm like, so if the definition of equity is fair and just, I don't know what fair and just is any more than I know what equity is, unless you're talking about through a moral lens. You know, if you talk about through a moral lens, but that's not what they want to talk about. What's fair and just for the public will be decided by the government. And when government is substituting what's right and wrong versus the individual and their relationship with their faith and their creator, we're headed down the wrong path. You don't want government deciding what's right and wrong.
So you are an anomaly in terms of being someone who is a public figure and is very comfortable speaking about your faith, your morals. Why does it feel like, and we are in a school, so if you hear some background noise, folks, it's okay. But why are so many public figures shy away from discussing their faith?
I think it's for an issue of popularity. I mean, it's always chasing the perpetual reelection, the notion that they represent the public by redefining what the public wants and imposing on the public, you know, what their agenda is. And so it becomes a personal agenda for power or a personal agenda for political gain instead of, look, let's just look at the job, you know, and the job of a school board member is to meet the needs of the individual child where they are. And that means respecting parents and parents' rights and putting parents as, you know, the primary educators of their children. That isn't actually the lens that a lot of school board members bring. You know, they want to be the one who decides what's best for a child, and that they inform the family how the child is best educated. And it really is an inverse relationship. And is there a degree of comfort? Yes, I guess there's a degree of comfort, but I don't know any other way to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you know, I'm an open book. I'm not different, you know, when I have a town hall or private office hours, or I meet individually with a teacher or an employee or a parent. But I do try to authentically represent them. But I'm going to represent them based on who I am and how I was raised. In a Catholic family, in a military family. Mm-hmm. You know, I lived all over the country. Mm-hmm. And home was not a house, not an edifice, but it was the family and your church and, you know, kind of that military mindset of you serve your fellow man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it feels like we've moved away from that in a sense, which is scary, which is really, really scary. What do you say, you know, to people who, you know, feel like church and schools should be separate, completely separate?
Well, look, we have a public school system for a reason. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should be acknowledging any religious holidays in a public school calendar, even though that's about to be a follow-on motion just this week, is looking at acknowledging certain religious holidays on the calendar. That's not the role. In having had my children in private school and in parochial school, I know that there's a place for that. But it doesn't mean that students or teachers or other employees or school board members should hang their faith at the school door. Mm-hmm. That's the difference, is that do you want an ethical teacher? Do you want an ethical student? Do you want students to not cheat? If they shouldn't cheat, why shouldn't they cheat? What's the basis for not cheating versus cheating? Mm-hmm. Well, that is the difference between right and wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, where does that ultimately originate? Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, because. Mm-hmm. It's because it was set down. This is natural law between God and man. This is a contract mm-hmm. of, look, this is the way I've created things, and you have free will. You can either choose to follow what I've asked you to do or not. And ultimately, we each walk, you know, with that burden in life of what our choices are, and that we'll answer for them.
So what would be your advice to, you know, people who may be listening, considering a career in the public, or people who are listening who are currently public figures who just wish they could be who they are, especially when it comes to their faith or what their beliefs are, or continually find themselves, you know, facing conviction? Because it's a continual battle, I suppose, especially in 2019.
I'm going to tell you, it's not for the faint of heart. it's a little bit, you have to decide that this is your mission, this is your call, that you are willing to carry out whatever your duties are. You know, whether you're a doctor, a real estate agent, a car mechanic, or a school board member, or any other public official. That you don't separate what you do professionally, and you don't separate your public service from who you are in your private life. I think then you become inauthentic. Then you're chasing a promotion. You're chasing a re-election. You're chasing, you know, a new job based on an artificial construct that mm-hmm. has nothing to do with who you are privately, mm-hmm. and giving people the power to say, look, it's okay. It's okay to, I'm not asking people to proselytize openly, but it is okay to make decisions and to be informed in how you interact with other people based on what you believe. And if you come from a faith tradition, uphold it. Don't let it go. Don't wane, you know, be strengthened, you know, whether it's daily prayer, going to, you know, your church service, whatever it is that informs you to be strengthened, do that more, not less, because that's what you have to hold on to at the end of the day.
What has been the hardest, most difficult decision, choice, vote for you as a board member?
There are two. One actually has to do with the boundary for this school. There was a decision to change a boundary that eliminated an attendance island, and we're talking about boundaries right now. That was a very difficult, I think that was probably one of the worst decisions this board made, because ultimately I saw in the long term that it would lead to overcrowding of a school, mm-hmm. and moving students just to move them without any real particular need. And that is exactly what has transpired. Woodson is now very overcrowded. It makes students go a longer distance, and it broke up a historical boundary just for the sake of breaking it up. And to have to point that out and then wait in time for that to come to fruition, you know, to forecast something and be the only one forecasting it, is very difficult. You know, it's easy to go along with a vote. Then also the vote not to support any change in our discrimination policy for any reason. And that was multiple votes. And I quoted a new GM president at the time, a female, who overhauled her entire discrimination policy and wardrobe policy because she felt that it was overly complicated, and said, don't discriminate. Two words, don't discriminate. And what a beautiful phrase. I don't think we should discriminate based on sex, age, religion, political affiliation, or gender orientation, or all of that. But to classify certain people as a protected class and say, we're going to treat you differently because of what you say you are, or because of you of inherent natural characteristics, now you're dividing people. Now you're creating opportunities where we're going to say, we're going to treat you differently because. We shouldn't treat anybody in a discriminatory manner. And I knew that was going to be taken completely out of context. I was very transparent with the thoughts and shared it with the audience. And I've been brutalized ever since, through a political lens. And it's so unfortunate because I think the type of bullying that that we're accused of if we say something like that, well, you're bullying, or you're a bigot or a racist or anything, all of the ists get attributed to you by people who are doing exactly, they're projecting, they're doing exactly what they say we should not do. And to be the target of that, when it's very common sense, you know, it's very reasonable to say, we need to make wise decisions that respect people's personal bodies, personal spaces, that respect girls in sports and their ability to participate and earn scholarships. That's not difficult. It's pretty straightforward, but it will always be taken out of context, and you know it up front. And the question is, do you have the courage to say what people are thinking, or do you just keep your mouth shut?
And so you do not do the latter.
I don't say things to put it, you know, out in the public. I just say what is necessary to reflect what I think is very much a public sense of things. As was evidenced at the boundary meeting last night, I didn't even know all those people were going to be there, but they certainly reacted in a way. They just want, I think, their public servants at any elected level, whether it's the bottom of the ticket like we are, or all the way up to the president and Congress, I think they just want people to say clearly, what is it that you stand for, and how are you going to do it, and we're going to hold you accountable if you don't. And it's not that. It's not complicated. I think we overcomplicate it by trying to obfuscate who we really are. And that's the hiding of the lens, that if you are operating from a position of faith, well, I'm just not, you know, I'm going to do that in my private life, or I'm going to do that on Sundays, but I'm not going to do it in my public life. And I think it's very unfortunate. I think it makes things more confusing than they need to be for the public about where people stand. And we make a lot more, I think, decisions for the public good based on where we stand if we just said it.
And that's the good word. Thank you so much.
That is a good word.
So, of course, we want to tell everyone, make sure you subscribe. We're on iTunes and Audioboom and Google Play, and, of course, everywhere the podcasts play. And then we have a very robust Facebook group, which is awesome. But thank you so, so much, Elizabeth Schultz, Fairfax County School Board member. We've been wanting to have this conversation for a very, very long time. So I'm so happy we finally had it.
Well, I'm thrilled. And look, I think that what you are doing with this podcast, just as important as it is to have guests, I think the fact that you're doing this is brave. And I commend you for doing it and offering a lens for different people from different, completely different areas of life to talk about why their faith matters and how they enact their faith in their daily life, whatever their role in society is. And I'm really grateful that you started this. I was excited when I heard that you were doing it, and I've been looking forward to doing this as well.
Thanks, Elizabeth.